One of the things I've asked them and challenged them about this year is really doing a better job of putting computer science into that curriculum. In fact, I was over at EWA, as I think I mentioned earlier, and talking to a couple of the teachers in that program, and they're excited that we got some grant money to send them to some programming on using, you know, what do they need to do to be better gifted teachers and working with computer science more effectively. And they're very excited about that opportunity. You know, we're trying to work with Ball State right now to get one of our schools to be a STEM certified elementary school so they can then graduate elementary education teachers who are STEM certified. So they need to be in a STEM certified building to work. And again, one of our long-term goals, actually, was one of the first meetings I had with Jay Julian and a potential business owner, was the fact that they would like to see more STEM education in our schools and what could they do to support that. So one of our goals is to have a STEM-oriented elementary school shortly, and it sounds like Ball State may be able to help us get the funding to do that. We're also working on expanding our pre-K programs. You know, that's very important to us. We're looking at putting together a bilingual immersion kindergarten starting next year so that children coming in as kindergartners would have the opportunity to learn both Spanish and English. And if that goes well for us, our goal, I think, would be to expand it long term to include one of, you know, sort of the up and coming languages. In fact, I just got a grant application today about getting teachers of Arabic and Chinese, you know, through federal funding. And so if Spanish works and we can get the traction we need, we'd like to expand to either Arabic and Chinese in another building. So kids really have, as they leave high school, we would hope that they would be trilingual, because we'd still expect them to take a language in high school, but we'd expect by the time they leave eighth grade, they're already truly fluent in Spanish and English. So. All right. Another thing we're working at is really trying to work on our kindergarten retention rate. You know, previously we've kept about 80 or 90 first graders in kindergartens back every year. And again, then they feel like they've kind of not been successful. It puts a poor taste in their mouth as they start their school experience. But more importantly, a lot of those kids are that way because they weren't kindergarten ready in the first place. You know, Grissom, which had the highest number of potential children to be retained, only has 8% of their kids who come in kindergarten ready, according to BY5's numbers. Well, what we did is offer an extended learning opportunity for those kids over the summer, and allowed them to try to catch up with their peers so they wouldn't have to lose an entire school year. Of the kids who were involved, about 85% of those kids were successful and moved in with their traditional peers as far as going to first grade or second grade. The two principals who were really involved in putting that program together want to expand it next year to second grade. And we'll obviously track their success to make sure that we're getting long-term success out of this program. You know, our middle schools, again, we're working with STEM a lot to make sure that we do more integrated programs. One of the neatest integrated programs we did was actually with one of our school resource officers, you know, Officer Qualls from the Muncie Police Department, talking about evidence and how to make sure you have evidence in your essay. So he put a crime scene together, and then he also works as an evidence technician, was showing the students how you build your evidence so they could then use that as they built their essay and how to build their evidence to put that together. You wouldn't normally think police work works with, you know, writing an English paper, though most policemen will tell you they probably spend a lot more time writing reports than they'd like to. But that was a really cool experience. And it was a good way, again, to show our students how their curriculum really does tie into what they're going to do in the real world. You know, so you don't have kids going, well, I'd like to be a policeman. Why do I need to learn English? Well, here's why. And so it was a really neat opportunity. And again, we have the great relationship we have with the Muncie Police Department and the Delaware County Sheriffs, both who are in our buildings as resource officers, is something we really want to try to expand on as we can. The alternative program that we put in place last year called Swagger at Southside has been exceptionally successful. Those were kids, for the most part, who had huge discipline issues. I mean, some of them had more than 90 or 100 discipline referrals over the course of the year, were failing all their courses. Half of those kids dropped their discipline numbers to under 20 referrals over the course of the year. and, you know, had decent pass and grade point averages. Some of the kids even got 3.0s. In fact, I cannot say enough positive things about the Swagger program, to the fact that we expanded it. So we now have a passport program, which is very similar at Northside, and we have an alternative program, because Chris Walker and I guess, are not particularly creative when it comes to names, called the alternative program. Sorry. But again, we've taken kids who are just not being successful in the traditional classroom and are giving them the opportunity to be successful. One of the interesting things about that alternative program, kids who could, quote, earn their way out through good behavior would be, you know, get the opportunity to go back and be in a regular class, for instance, often would misbehave because they don't want to be in those regular classes. They are happy, and they're experiencing success like they've never had in their entire life by being in that alternative program, which is more restrictive, but it's still providing them an opportunity to be successful. And so that has really been a great change. We've actually, in fact, I visited there today too. I was at Southview Middle School, or Elementary School. Southview has an alternative program for elementary students that we're trying, and again, and that's a very different situation. There we're trying to get the kids to learn the right behaviors so that then they can go back and be successful in their classroom. That program is not intended to keep them for their career. It's supposed to be a short term, maybe a semester, and then get them back into the regular classroom with the coping strategies they need to be able to be successful. So definitely some good things going on there. There's a food pantry in place at Southside right now, so that if you come to the parent event, you have the opportunity to leave with some food in some cases. They're doing that at Southview Elementary as well. And then at Northside, actually, last year they started the process of building their PTO up again. For some reason, we can always get kids or parents to be PTO people at the elementary level. And at the high school, you know, people are always willing to be boosters. I don't know what it is about middle school kids, but their parents don't want to be around them a lot. But we do, you know, I mean, that's always a struggle. And Jackie Samuels has done, I think, a great job of trying to pull the parent group together and really build a strong foundation, which we continue to work on, to get more parent engagement at the middle school level. So, finances and facilities. Interestingly enough, the top picture there is from a musical, which is actually written and directed entirely by Muncie Central students. It was great. It was really interesting. One of the things that was interesting is that it was hilarious. I really enjoyed it. But it was based on the concept that they were going to write their own musical because they had to figure out how to get money because the school had none. So maybe everybody isn't paying attention when we talk about finances, but the students appeared to have caught on. And really, I'm hoping that we can figure out a way to get that musical back again in some other format. It was really well done. And again, when we talk finances and facilities, it's always good to have cheerleaders. Sort of the bad news up front is the Department of Education, the State Board of Accounts, last April, after they finished the State Board of Accounts audit, basically have asked us that we need to put together a deficit reduction plan, similar to what Gary has done. Because again, we're just spending more than we take in, and many of you are business people. You understand that if you do that long enough, you just run out of money. And if you look, and it's kind of hard to see here, general fund, but basically in the upper left corner there, that's everything but salaries and benefits. So a little less than 25% of our total cost is not personnel related. So, you know, we can only save so much paper. You know, we spend about $200,000 a year on paper. We can save a little, but we're not going to save the numbers we need. And again, if you take our finances, basically calendar year general fund, which is where most of our money is, you know, we're fund-based accounting, so we have, you know, debt service, we have transportation, we have capital improvements, but most of our money is in the general fund. If you see, basically, for the last decade, we've pretty much been spending more money than we've been taking in. There are a couple exceptions to that, and actually, that's the year we got federal stimulus money. And so, we're out of reserves. You know, as we look at our operating balances and cash reserves, December 31st, we're set to be at about negative $10 million in the bank. So it's hard to pay your bills when, you know, you don't have that kind of money. The only thing that's really allowing us to continue to float is we do have general obligation bonds that were sold in 2014. But, you know, that those general obligation bonds were sold to do specific facilities projects, mostly related to heating and air conditioning work in the buildings. And we haven't really started those projects. The problem is we only have 5 years under federal law to do that work. And so we have to do that work in the next 2 years in order to be compliant. So that $10 million, which has basically been a buffer, is going to disappear for us. So if it, you know, again, our real number at the end of the year across all funds will be a little better than that. But again, much of that money is restricted and we can't use. And again, I have to show the cap, the tax cap loss, you know, because and the mayor's here and he feels my same pain on this. You know, people go, well, everybody else is under the tax cap too. Why can't you, you know, deal with it in the Muncie Community Schools? Well, because we're losing basically 44% of all the money we would get through property taxes. Whereas if you go over, you know, to Liberty Perry, you know, they're losing about a dollar out of every $100. We're losing 44 out of every $100. And so, you know, the circuit breaker laws have a huge impact on urban districts that they just don't have on rural areas. And obviously, urban areas have more services and more things that they have to provide. But that's one of the reasons. We are really unfairly penalized for being in an urban area compared to some of the, you know, more rural areas. I need to point out our rainy day fund. You see our balance has been pretty much steady since 2014. There's absolutely no money in it at all. You know, and again, part of that goes back to our circuit breaker. We're basically, when you look at a percentage of impact on a school district, we've pretty much got the second highest impact after Gary across the state. So one of the things that unfortunately, I don't know if it's good or bad that it's today, it's unfortunate just in general, is that we're not having school today at Northside Middle School because the heating and air conditioning system just died yesterday to the point that we can't ensure a minimum temperature in that building today. Hopefully it's being fixed as we speak. But if you look, this is sort of the last decade of how much we spent on facilities repairs every year. You know, and we're spending about $2 million or so a year. And then as the budgets got tighter, it's easy to just put off maintenance. I know some of you have the same problems. You know, it's easy to say, well, you know, we'll get to that. We have to make sure we make salary payments, things like that. You get to the point, however, where stuff just starts to break. And we're pretty much there. You know, I mean, several of our buildings, our systems really are way beyond what would be considered their useful lifespan. So facilities in general, and again, the second meeting of our comprehensive facilities task force is actually this evening. At Southside, they're starting to do some tours of the buildings. Again, this is one of the things that came out of our strategic plan, trying to make sure that we get the buildings in place and that we make sure that we have the right footprint to serve our kids. You know, one of the keys really working with these is energy management, particularly at Central High School is where we're working first. We're working with an outside vendor to basically put in solar power in six of our schools right now, which over time will basically get us entirely off the grid and potentially will allow us to make some money. I know the library did something similar. So you'll start to see solar panels north of the high school. That's the first piece of that work. We're working on getting six schools done, and then assuming that goes well, we'll work on adding the other six primary schools as far as getting them effectively off the grid. And over time, we'll get to the point where we won't have an electric bill at all anymore, and hopefully we'll make some money. So the technology infrastructure work needs to be done. And again, as we continue to work the iPads that we have now and move to Chromebooks, we need to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place that allows that to work. So again, trying to make those environmentally friendly schools. One of the things our maintenance partner, SSC, is doing is working on developing a real corporation-wide recycling program and getting kids involved in that. So We're feeling that's good. We're going to be able to hopefully, as we do some of the renovation work on a couple of these buildings, get green certification for them, and try to really reduce our carbon and fossil fuel footprint. So again, partnerships have been exceptionally important. You know, one of the biggest things I think that we could do, sorry about that, is work with a wide range of groups in the community. You know, one of the things I challenged every one of our teachers to do last year and this year as well was to apply for at least one grant. It could be something small, like, you know, a Donors Choose grant or something through Walmart for, you know, a couple hundred bucks or low. Last year, we actually brought in $1.1 million in grant money. 87 faculty and staff. So at about 600, not everybody took part, but, you know, that's better than you'd get from most survey results. We did have a lot of staff who took advantage of the opportunity and really reached out to get some grants. We have a lot more working on more this year. We brought in 123 individual grants. And so, again, I think that was a great opportunity on the part of our staff to try to make sure that, you know, we're doing everything we can to look not at just traditional revenue sources, but what can we do as far as looking at alternative revenue sources, non-traditional things that we can do to bring more money into the corporation, do the things that our kids deserve to have access to, just as in people in a more affluent district. The strategic planning process, many of you were involved in that process. Again, thank you for all your time and effort on that. We actually had six working teams that worked to put together, five working teams to put together a plan that the board approved in June, and we're working on getting that out. But basically the major goals for that, you know, for this year effectively are implement our strategic plan that was built, you know, from the community, which include things like, you know, trying to provide a more personalized and digitally rich learning environment for kids, improve our curriculum overall, provide more diversity for kids so they have more choice, you know, strengthen the partnerships really to provide the mental health services and the support of learning that we need to, whether it's making sure kids aren't hungry, that they have clothes, that they get the support they need, addressing our fiscal issues, living within our fiscal means, better engage the public, I think, is really important, and particularly how do we engage parents more effectively. We've got to do a better job of trying to figure out how to get parents in the door and getting them to be true partners with us, and we're working on that. We have a committee working with a group of parents to try to figure out how can we address and engage parents in ways that will make them want to come, and then develop a much better strategic plan for our professional development. Most of the professional development we've done over the last few years has been pretty hit and miss, which is not uncommon, but we really need to put the things in place to make sure that we have systemic opportunities for our staff to learn what they need to learn to be more effective in their classrooms. Again, improving student achievement, and then again, just at a very basic level, making sure our kids are all safe and secure. You know, the student improvement piece, again, one real key is trying to get more instructional leadership, particularly the secondary level with our department chairs, giving them more of a voice in the process of developing curriculum. One thing that's been new, even some of the people have commented since Chris Walker took over at Central, he's been involving those department chairs where he can in hiring staff. And, you know, people say, well, you know, nobody ever did that before. We want to make sure the department chairs have real ownership of their departments and they feel they're the leader. Figuring out where we can be more effective with Ivy Tech and BSU to get our kids across the stage with that associate's degree and definitely with a good plan for what they're going to do after they leave school. Again, computer science at all levels, definitely that's a nationwide issue. Reducing absenteeism and discipline, again, PBIS is a big piece of this. We've got great response from the county prosecutor when we have extremes in absenteeism as far as helping to support us on that. Again, figuring out ways to reduce our failure rates and reduce our retention rates so we can have more kids be successful the first time through. And then again, encouraging extracurricular participation. The more kids who are involved in those extracurricular activities, the more likely they are to be successful in school. And then again, security and safety. One of my real goals, you know, and I've been talking to Ray Dudley and Chuck Hensley, our security chief, about what can we do. We're trying to find grant opportunities to get full-time law enforcement officers in our building, so they're, you know, not, they're not just there for a couple of shifts, a couple of times a week, but but they really have the opportunity to build strong relationships with our kids, because that obviously will help us long term. Again, deal with emergency issues, and then again, expanding PBIS. Again, that ties in with JDAI in the work and trying to make sure that we don't just put kids in jail for things, but we provide kids opportunities. One thing that they've done is the day reporting thing, that kids, instead of just going to detention, can go to day reporting after school. The feedback I get from the kids is they absolutely hate it. You know, I've talked to the juvenile justice people about, we like that because then if a kid gets suspended, instead of going to the YOC and having a shorter day, they now magically get a longer day. And it didn't quite work out for them the way they wanted. And we've actually seen our suspension rates go down. And so that's what we all want, is we want kids to be in school. So you know. And again, just some of the partnerships. You know, one of the most interesting partnerships was, is we deal with the mental health issues. You know, again, when somebody breaks a leg, we'd all be there to help. Sometimes when people have mental health issues, people just want to ignore it or kind of say, well, you know, fix it yourself. So I reached out to Centerstone and Meridian and said, hey, is there anything you guys can do to potentially partner with us? As of now, I think we have 11 people, 2 from Centerstone and 9 from Meridian, in our schools. No cost to us to partner with us as behavior family navigators. And the family navigator piece comes from, you know, the preschool United Way approach of trying to make sure parents don't have to go to a bunch of different people, but one person will just help them do everything they need to do. So that's been very important. You know, the Muncie Public Library is working with us to have one union catalog. I know that might be exciting to many of you. But again, it means that any family who wants to book, they now only have one place they have to go. They don't have to go to potentially 4 different catalogs if they could find them and figure out where books are. You know, and I hate to even pretend to try to go through all of the partnerships because I don't want to miss any. But I think the other one that's really key is working with BY5 to get 2 preschools open, hopefully by January 1st, at Grissom Elementary, as I mentioned before, 8% of those kids are kindergarten ready when they come to us, and at Store. And we chose Store and Grissom because they're very different demographics within the community. There's room in both buildings. Carrie was nice enough to find some money for us, hopefully through a grant, to cover the cost of turning empty classrooms into preschool rooms. And then, even more importantly, BY5, I think, is it fair to say this, is going to come up with the money to pay the staff until we hope the state actually comes up with universal preschool funds. And so that's huge, because it's a good place to start, and we're in a place where when the state does come through, we will be in a place to be able to expand and add preschool. Our ultimate goal is to have preschool available for every child who wants it. You know, it's heartbreaking when I talk to a parent who knows their child wasn't ready for kindergarten, but she put him in kindergarten because she didn't have any other daycare option. You know, and so then the child ends up getting retained or starts having discipline problems because they're struggling. You know, this is a way, hopefully, to identify and eliminate many of those problems. And again, there are a lot of partners involved, you know, BY5, BSU, the United Way, the YMCA, Huffer, United Child Care. You know, they're all involved in doing that. The Whiteley Community Center really wants to work one-on-one with our kids. They're coming every Tuesday and Thursday morning right now just to welcome kids to school and say, hey, how are you doing? Glad you're here. You know, we're supporting you. They're trying to get volunteers to work with our kids during lunch and provide some mentoring opportunities for kids. Again, those are all things that I just think are really important, and obviously we would not be able to be successful without the help of all of the partners that I mentioned, and unfortunately, I'm sorry if I forgot you. If you go through our list of concerns from 2015 address, you know, the first one was, you know, kindergarten readiness. We're addressing that in a lot of different ways. If you look through all of those things, I think we're starting to make progress in all of those issues. And again, Annie Picardo will do all of the magic work of making all this available to you, and I'm sure Jay will have his people send the link out. You know, transparency has been, you know, an issue that people love to bring up, that we're not transparent. Actually, I think this address in itself shows some level of transparency. The other thing, and just because every once in a while I have somebody do math for me, the number of pages of materials that are available through the public packets on board meetings, it was about 163 for the first quarter of 2013. The first quarter this year was actually 1,539 pages of materials about reports from our administrative staff, information about our fiscal situation. We've done a much better job of trying to be transparent in putting information on the web. We also didn't put information for our work sessions on the web. We didn't publish those agendas and public packets electronically. We do now. We've been doing that basically since October of 2015. So I think actually we've done a very good job of transparency, but there are some things people love to use as, you know, in a good example. Well, you're not being transparent. Well, okay, how? I think by any measure we're doing a good job. And again, I need to end with another founding father here. Alexander Hamilton has a great point here, basically that, you know, people want to do things the way they've always done them. And that when you start to have to make change, and we're at the point where we need to make change, you've seen the, you know, the fiscal graphs, we're not in a position where we continue to do things the way we've done them. Sometimes there's some difficulty with doing those things. Hamilton was a pretty smart guy. Some upcoming events, and again, we send this out a lot of different ways all the time, but I really encourage you to take the opportunity to come and see our plays, our musicals, our student events, because they really showcase all of the good things going on in the Muncie Community Schools. And I think there are a lot of really good things going on. Our staff and our students come to school every day, and the vast majority of them are doing great things. And the opportunity for you to see them and compliment them on those things is really great. So again, thank you for your support. I really appreciated everything that you all do as partners for us. If you have questions, I'll stay around afterwards to listen to those, and try to answer them. And I have some staff here who probably have answers to all the questions I don't know the answer to. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you again, Dr. Ball, enlightening stuff. And thank you for spending some of your time to stay around afterwards. You all heard he and his staff will stay here. If any of you have questions or comments, interesting tidbits that you'd like to share or learn more about, I'm sure that Steve and his team will be here to provide answers for you. Again, thank you to all of you for attending our event this afternoon. Please be safe going back to your places of work and home, and we look forward to seeing you maybe even tomorrow night at our annual dinner. Thank you all. 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 Thank you all.